Okay. So I want to talk about the Ramond-Ramond sector of two-dimensional non-critical string theory. And so this is the title of my talk, Non-Perturbative Ramond-Ramond Potential in the CI equals 1 Matrix Model. And this is the title I would have used if I had been allowed to give this talk in the cosmology program. And so what I will be talking about is a paper with David and appeared 2 weeks ago. Number is 03-12021. And so the subject is CI equals 1 matrix models. So there has been a revival in recent months of interest in string theory in two dimensions. And so this started in the spring with a paper by McRevy-Verlinde, where they related unstable D-brains with rolling eigenvalues in the C plus 1 bosonic matrix model. And this was then sharpened a little bit by Klebanov, Montesina, and Seiberg. And then there were two papers on supersymmetric extensions of these things by Takayanagi and Tumbas, and then by DKKMMS, Douglas, Kutasov, Klebanov, Martinik, Montesina, Seiberg. And generically referred to as the six brains. And so to tell you why two-dimensional string theory is of interest, again, so in general, it's useful to have some toy models for higher dimensional theories. But why is it of interest again now? There are two reasons. So one concerns the non-perturbative. Both of these reasons are contained in the title. So first one is about the non-perturbative effects. So remind you that in the bosonic matrix model, where you have these fermions in the inverted harmonic oscillator potential, you have the Fermi C on one side of the potential, and the non-perturbative effects correspond to tunneling through this barrier and the effects of order e to the minus 1 over G-string, and this, of course, anticipated the importance of D-brains in string theory. But in the context of these bosonic theories, these non-perturbative effects actually signal an instability of the theory. And so it's not so clear what one should calculate. Now, with the supersymmetric versions, you actually fill both sides of the potential, and then you can, so this is non-perturbatively stable, and then you can ask what kind of non-perturbative effects one can compute. And so well, I'll tell you which quantities one can compute. I would like to digress a little on, so this is the second reason why I think that this is of interest again, and this is that the fact that these theories have a Ramond-Ramond sector. So in general, in string theory, if we want to construct realistic models, we compactify, for example, the type 2 string on the Kolbe-Yau manifold. And we face the problem that we have to stabilize the moduli. And there are generically, one might distinguish two types of moduli if you want. One is, at least in this type 2 context, geometric moduli, and they're also Ramond-Ramond moduli. So these are just the shapes and size of the compactification manifold, and these are periods of Ramond-Ramond potentials and various cycles. And these are, of course, connected by supersymmetry, if you have it. And so to stabilize these moduli, it has been appreciated in recent years that one can generically stabilize at least half of the moduli by turning on Ramond-Ramond fluxes. In the compactification manifold, and this generically stabilizes the complex structure moduli. And so there is, of course, the paper by Giddings, Kotru, Polchinski, who showed that generically you can stabilize all the complex structure moduli and also dilaton in this way. But there's always the other half of the moduli, the Kähler moduli, which remain unfixed in this procedure. And so the Kähler moduli rho is theta plus I sigma. So where sigma is the overall size of the manifold, and theta is an axion-like field. So this is actually one of these Ramond-Ramond moduli. And there is, of course, there's symmetry that sort of protects this. And so in order to generate a potential for this Kähler modulus, you need non-perturbative effects. And so, they generate a potential for the Kähler moduli?
Yeah, there's paper, Becker,
and this you can show on that on scale structure of the potential. It's not really cool that you really can stabilize
the camera. No, but you get a potential.
Yes,
yeah,
it's true.
Okay. I mean,
it might be just a runaway potential, but yes,
we can make a potential. Okay, so a runaway potential. Okay, so that's actually maybe the point that, okay, you can maybe generate some potentials if you break supersymmetry, but it will be a runaway potential. And if you want to stabilize, then you need these non-perturbative effects. And so they look like e to the I rho, some superpotential like this. And this was, of course, used then by the famous KKLT to construct models of the Sitter space. And so what I want to show is I want to discuss the answer to a very similar question in this two-dimensional, in this two-dimensional context. So this two-dimensional 0B theory has, there's a Ramond-Ramond scalar called C, and there will be potential for this field V of C. And the mechanism is a little bit similar to this discussion over there. So you can generate, you have to turn on the Ramond-Ramond flux to generate a potential. And perturbatively, you get a runaway potential, which doesn't have any stationary points, which then is stabilized by non-perturbative effects. And because the answer is so nice, let me give you the expression for this V of C. So it's an integral inverse cosine of C divided by square root of 1 plus e to the minus 2 pi a. And you integrate from mu minus q to mu plus q, where mu can be identified with the inverse string coupling, and q is the Ramond-Ramond flux that I've turned on. And so what does this potential look like? So obviously this e to the minus 2 pi a is where the non-perturbative effects are. So if I neglect this and I have just the inverse cosine of the cosine, this is just a linear potential. So it's linear, and it's obviously periodic in C.
I'm sorry, Johannes, what's the relation between A and mu?
A is integrated over.
Yeah, the limits of A are mu plus or minus q.
Plus or minus q.
Plus or minus q.
So you integrate dA.
I'm sorry, mu plus.
You integrate from mu minus q. You can also call this mu minus.
Okay. And I thought that was q equals q.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
And so then around sequel 0 and sequel pi, you find that this is important, and the linear behavior is cut off by these non-predator effects, and you have potential that looks like this. It's mostly linear, but then there are these regions around 0 and pi where things are look a little different. So this is this potential, and this is the landscape of two-dimensional string theory.
Wait, is a Ramon scalar and is a two-form flux, or?
It's the flux of this Ramon scalar.
Oh, okay, it's just a one, it's a gradient.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a one. Yeah, yeah.
Because the flux of the scalar, doesn't that mean it's a time derivative? I mean, isn't the flux C dot?
But you're still, you can still shift by a constant.
Or the flux of C prime. The flux of C prime, you can shift by a constant.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And it's this constant that that this potential is for. Okay, I mean, there's some more subtleties about this potential that I will mention in the during the talk. But
so there's an infinite number of degenerate vacuum?
Well, it's a periodic. They're all identified. Okay, so let me briefly tell you what is coming up. We'll start with a very brief review of the bosonic and zero B matrix models. Then I will talk about the Ramon sector of zero B theory in two dimensions. And we'll show that there is this, well, I will explain a little what this flux background is. And then I will identify these identification in the matrix model of this Ramon flux. And this will immediately lead to the computation of the potential. I will at least explain how to compute, and it's very simple. I mean, I don't have time to go through the computation that lead to this exact expression, but it's actually very simple to see. And then we'll talk about, well, there are two more applications that that one can do, but I don't know if we'll have time to talk much about them. One is one can compute the finite temperature partition function for these in the presence of flux. This corresponds to compactifying Euclidean time and T-duality with the zero A model. So the zero A model is, for those who were here, is the model that Andy Strominger talked about last week. And then there's another application, which is that you can use this model to study scattering amplitudes in the Ramon background. But I really don't have much to say about this, except that you can do it. Okay. Any questions? So these matrix models of interest, they're matrix quantum mechanics. So you start with the quantum mechanics of n by n Hermitian matrices, with a potential V of m, which has a quadratic maximum at n equals 0. And then maybe has some stable like this. Then you can, in the singlet sector, you reduce this to the eigenvalues. And because of the measure factor, they behave like fermions. And so just in non-interacting fermions in this potential. And they occupy in the ground state the n lowest energy levels in this potential. And then you take the continuum limit n to infinity and Planck's constant to zero, keeping mu fixed, where mu is the distance of the Fermi level from the top of the potential. And so now the only parameters that survive this this scaling limit are this Fermi level, mu, and also the curvature of the potential around m equals zero. And so the difference between the bosonic and the supersymmetric model lie in both. So in the bosonic model, we were instructed to only fill one half of the Fermi C, so only the left of these levels. And V double prime of zero was minus 1 over alpha prime, which is minus the mass squared of the open string tachyon. Yeah. And in the supersymmetric model, we fill both sides, and V double prime of zero is minus 1 over 2 alpha prime, which is the mass squared of the open string tachyon in the of the supersymmetric of the superstring. Okay. And so the world sheet description of these models is that the Wolfi description is that of C equals 1 or C equals 1 or C hat equal to 1 matter coupled with 2D gravity, and either bosonic gravity or N equals 1 gravity, and in that, in the supersymmetric case, you make it type 0 VJ's O projection. And mu has the interpretation of the Wolfschied cosmological constant in this Liouville theory. And the space-time interpretation so it's a two-dimensional space-time T and phi, so T is the same time as of the matrix quantum mechanics, and phi is just the spatial direction, and you have a linear dilaton, phi equals phi, and to cut off the strong coupling region at infinite phi, you introduce this, you turn on this tachyon field. So this is now, this is the closed string tachyon, which is the center of mass of the string, and it's actually massless field in two dimensions. And so you turn on the stack and fill mu equal to the phi. And this tachyon background, so this is a solution of the linearized equations of motion. This is the space-time interpretation. So and the collective excitations of this Fermi C correspond to field theory degrees of freedom that scatter off this Liouville wall. And so in the bosonic model, you had only the tachyon as field theoretic degree of freedom. Now in the 0B model, you have the tachyon, and also you have the Ramond-Ramond scalar C. And so even fluctuations of the Fermi C correspond to the tachyon, and odd fluctuations correspond to the Ramond-Ramond scalar. So this is even or odd under the Z2 symmetry that you have in this potential.
Just a
general question. So everyone talks about the 0A or 0B matrix models, but are there sort of 2A and 2B versions of this also? Matrix models which have space-time supersymmetry?
Well, there's no, okay. You can do a type, you can do a type 2B GSO projection, but it doesn't lead to space-time supersymmetry. So in that sense, not type 2. And the reason is that there's actually only n equals 1 Walsh supersymmetry here. And to do the type 2B GSO projection, which would lead to space-time supersymmetry, you need n equals 2 on the Walsh. So it's not really type 0. It's actually type 0 halves. Okay, because you have less Walshian supersymmetry than you would need to actually make the GSO.
So what about two halves? That's what you're saying.
No, this doesn't work. So you have type. Okay, usually when you have an n equals two Walshian, you do the type 2 A or B GSO projection, mm-hmm. and that leads to n equals 2 space-time supersymmetry. But and you can make this wrong GSO projection, which leads to the 0A, 0B. And this has, this projects out the space-time fermions, this GSO projection. And you have a doubling of the Ramon sector because the Ramon ground states of both chiralities contribute. So you have a doubling of Ramon's. So this is doubling of the Ramon sector.
And here you don't double.
And here you don't if you have only n equals 1, you can sort of you could make this one also, but this would project out actually the space-time bosons, I believe, keep only the fermions. Okay, so now in general, in type zero theories, in 10 dimensions, for example, there are couplings between the closed string tachyon and the Ramon fields, and they look like this. And f of t, you can show, starts like this. And actually, from arguments of t-duality, you can argue that it should be of this form, this coupling function between the closed string tachyon and the Ramon fields. And so, and of course, in zero, and so you have a doubling of the Ramon sectors, and you also have all these Ramon fields have their d-brains, which carry electric charge under them. So now in this two-dimensional context, you have only one Ramon scalar. So this Ramon scalar now is, on the one hand, similar to the 10-dimensional axion, let's say, Ramon scalar of type 2 theories, but it's also similar to the middle-dimensional form. So it's both a scalar and a middle dimensional form. And so if we define, this would be the action that we take, and if we define fill strength to be e to the minus t dc, then you have the equations of motion and Bianchi identity equals 0 and e to the minus t star f equals 0. And this admits two linearly independent solutions. Alpha e to the minus t dt plus beta e to the t d phi. So this would be the solution of the linearized of these linearized equations of motion in this tachyon background. So you have an electric and a magnetic solution, but since it's like the middle dimensional form, only one of them is actually physical. And when mu is positive, it's the electric. In some conventions, it's the electric solution that is physical, and this is the one that I will consider. It's conventional whether you call this an electric or a magnetic, and actually by inverting the sign of mu, you can map one to the other. So there is some sort of duality that dualizes this scalar C and sends mu to minus mu. And then we also have this gauge symmetry, which shifts C by a constant. And but this is a perturbative gauge symmetry and is broken by instantons. And so one expects that in general there will be some sort of potential for
what
this.
The gauge symmetry?
Because it's similar to the gauge symmetries of the Ramon of the P form gauge fields.
The P form changes by d of one lower form, so it would be c changes by d of a minus one form.
Right.
That's.
But a constant is like a d of a minus one form.
If the gauge symmetries don't get broken, this is one does. I mean, hard to know what this one is and that one. Right. Does get broken sometimes.
Right. Yeah, okay, so now I want to identify identify these things in the matrix model. So let me start with this gauge symmetry. So these instantons are supposed to be related to the tunneling of eigenvalues through the potential barrier. So we identify the generator of this gauge symmetry with the difference in fermion number on the left and on the right. Of the potential. So in other words, if I shift the C goes to C C plus alpha, I multiply the phases of fermions on the left by a phase and fermions on the right by minus the phase. And
is there any relevance that the difference changes only by numbers?
That's just a normalization. So actually, if you want C to be, there's a factor of 2 here. This just has to do with what the charge of the instanton is. And the tunneling of the eigenvalues makes an infinitesimal change in the Fermi and the Fermi levels. So this is because the instantons carry the C field charge, and so I want to identify the flux background Q with the difference in Fermi levels on the left and on the right of the potential. So in other words, so this is a perturbative description. So I imagine that I fill the Fermi Cs on the left and right asymmetrically, mu right and mu left. And the difference, so this would be mu plus Q, and the other one is mu minus Q. Now, of course, when you allow for tunneling of eigenvalues, then this looks rather unstable. And you have to ask what happens to this non-perturbatively. And I will show you that this is actually non-perturbatively stabilized or completely well-defined. But before I go on to explaining this, let me just say how I will understand. So understanding how this is stabilized involves understanding the C field.
Mm-hmm.
in the matrix model. So let me just mention how you realize this C field in the finite n matrix model. So before you take C at finite n, so before you take this this scaling limit, so it's so the potential is just this the inverted harmonic oscillator, and I put the cutoffs by putting walls here, and so my perturbative energy levels look like this. And so I have Dirichlet boundary conditions here at x left and x right. And one way to take this double scaling limit is to rescale everything by h bar and send the walls off to infinity. And if I do this in a symmetric way, so then these perturbative energy levels are the same on the left and on the right. But if I it's easy to see that if you shift the walls a little bit asymmetrically, then this is the same as multiplying the phases of the wave functions by a multiplying the wave functions by a phase on the left and the right in a different way. So specifically, I want to take the double scaling limit by sending x left and x right asymmetrically to infinity. And so this shifts these wave functions by a phase. And then so this is an easy way. In general, what I want to say is that, of course, this looks like it depends on the way I've cut off the potential. But in general, you can say that I want to identify C with a mismatch of perturbative energy levels. So this would be the definition that does not depend on how I do this.
Is that just a perturbative definition? It seems strange to get a non-perturbative potential for a field which is only defined perturbatively.
I think it's perturbatively defined.
Well, this definition is not perturbative. It's non-perturbative.
C is a mismatch of perturbative energy.
This one is non-perturbative. I would even say that this one is a non-perturbative definition. But
this is the indefinite. It's this relative shift of those sets of levels on the right and the left because they're discrete spacing. I mean, is that the
right? They have a discrete spacing.
You know, like they're dealing with the pendulum, and you don't lose track of C, and somehow it's still there.
No, because actually you rescale it, right? You send h bar to zero.
Uh-huh.
But the density of states also goes up.
Right.
So actually, we'll see this in just a second, the computation, that the two things just cancel out. So you have to actually look for, this is why you have to regulate, because otherwise you wouldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see this direct just in the continuum limit. Okay, so let's look how the this was here. This is the situation for C equals zero when the energy levels on the left and the right are equal, and now when I make C non-zero, then they don't match. And so how can I compute the dependence? So the perturbative energy levels are just defined by some WKB approximation. So to lowest order, I can just take Bohr-Sommerfeld. That would be this 2 epsilon n minus v of lambda d lambda. And then I have, I integrate up to this classical turning point. And then I have a phase shift plus or minus c over 2. So if I want to compute d epsilon dc, I compute d epsilon dn dn dc. So dn dc is just 1 over 2 pi. And the epsilon dn is one, is the inverse of the density of states. So this is how the energy levels depend on c, 1 over 2 pi rho, where rho is the density of states. Plus or minus for left and right. So if I now fill the Fermi C as well, if I fill it symmetrically on the left and on the right, then these energy shifts on the left and right cancel out in pairs, and the ground state energy of my matrix model doesn't depend on C. But if I fill it asymmetrically, so I take mu left, mu right, and also mu left minus mu right finite, when I take the limit, then I get some perturbative V of C, which is integral d epsilon rho, and then this thing, the integrated this with respect to C, then it would be C over 2 pi rho, and they integrate from mu left to mu right. And I said mu left minus mu right was 2 times q, so this would be q times c over pi. That would be the perturbative potential.
This is before you take the tunneling into account.
Right. So just some obvious comments. So first of all, it's non-zero when q is non-zero. But second, it's finite. So notice that this is just a finite contribution to the energy. It doesn't have any volume divergence that you have for the full free energy of this matrix model. And the third interesting thing is that it doesn't have a stationary point. So it's just a linear potential. One can actually also ask, is there a space-time interpretation of this? Can you write some sort of term in the action that would capture such a contribution? And one can. So I mean, remember that F was Q times e to the Q times e to the t or minus t. So F of Q is, I can write this as dt, so this was the electric flux, infinity minus Ft of minus infinity, this was Q. So if I multiply this with C, I just get this, so I can write this as integral d phi of C Ft. This would be the contribution to the energy. So this would correspond to a term in the action, which looks like d of CF. So it's a total derivative term in the action. It's a little reminiscent of Trans-Simons type couplings in high dimensional theories. But anyway, so this non-perturbative potential that I will compute is the non-perturbative completion of such a term. Okay, so now what happens non-perturbatively? If I take tunneling into account, so as a function of C, I can plot these energy levels, and so I just showed you that the dependence is linear with the slope depending on the density of states. But so these would be on the right and on the left. And so these levels cross. So this is essentially because of this quantization condition that was here. There was this condition pi n h bar equals this plus or minus h bar c over 2. So if I shift c by 2 pi, I map the nth level to the n minus first level on the left, or to the n plus first level on the right. So this would be c equals 0. It would be c equals pi, 2 pi, and so on. So now if I take tunneling into account, so here c equals 0, then the energy levels were degenerate. Now if I take tunneling into account, there will be some splitting of these levels. Then when I increase c, there will be a regime in which the perturbative levels on the left and right don't match, and so tunneling is suppressed, or mixing is suppressed. So the behavior is essentially linear again. And then there will be this regime in which the perturbative levels would want to collide, but this is actually not what happens non-perturbatively. These energy levels repel each other, and so they reconnect like this. So this is the what happens non-perturbatively. And then because in these so except for small regions around c equals 0, pi, and so on, the behavior is essentially like the perturbative one. And particularly these states are localized either on the left or on the right of the potential. Close to here, they have a definite parity, and they can sort of adiabatically define this parity. So I can either say I want to define the parity under what happens when I adiabatically continue to c equals 0, or I can say it's the parity under the combined reflection xc goes to minus x minus c. And so perturbatively, q, which the flux background was identified with the difference Fermi levels for the left and on the right, non-perturbatively is the difference of Fermi levels for even and odd nodes with this definition of even and odd. And so the potential is just obtained by summing. Right, when q is 0, then again these things cancel in pairs. When q is non-zero, then what you get is just you sum these energies over the unpaired levels. And so again, the same thing happens, that the size of this dependence is, of course, 1 over the density of states, but you multiply the density of states when you integrate. So you get a finite answer. And now you can do this, of course, with this inverted harmonic oscillator. And what you get is the answer that I told you before. It's this 1 over 2 pi integral from mu minus to mu plus dA inverse cosine c divided by square root of 1 plus e to the minus 2 pi a.
You're populating the lower, in those split levels, it's the lower of F, the lower one is full and the upper one is empty in the state.
Right, when Q is non-zero, when I turn on this flux,
yes,
then I occupy every other level.
Every other level.
So these would be like the even levels, and these would be the odd level. I'm sorry. These are the odd levels.
Okay, so that's what I'm wondering. So what you're occupying is a linear combination of right and left. It's not, I was picturing sort of...
Right.
Right. So
but I mean, the point is that except here, it's sort of actually localized on one side. So it depends on C. It depends on C. When C is non-zero, when C is not here or here,
yes,
it's actually localized on the left or on the right. So this would be
right. It's localized
left,
except when you go through zero, and then it sort of...
When it goes through zero, but I mean, zero is where really the minimum of the potential is, so this is where you want to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And there it's even in odd levels. But when C is non-zero, you can also talk about left and right.
Is C something which is dynamical, so it can find its minimum, or is it really something which is frozen?
This is not, I'm not so completely sure about, but this is some comments I want to make.
Just ask this.
The boundary conditions are always good.
confusing about that. I mean, if I think of C as a local dynamical field in space-time, then I would think this potential energy is something you have to integrate over space.
This is the integral over space.
This is the energy, but it depends on C. But at which point?
The perturbative term is something like this, right? It just depends on sort of the boundary value of C.
Uh-huh. And so that also depends only on the boundary?
Yeah, this is the boundary value of C. But I mean, the reason why I think that there might be, it might actually be dynamically stabilized is because there is this, the action for the C looks like this. So when T goes to infinity, the C field is actually very light. So even an infinitesimal potential like this could conceivably stabilize this. Okay, I don't. But I mean, one interesting thing is that this, if you compute V double prime of C at the minimum, it actually looks like e to the prime u. So the V to the minus prime u. So the mass, if you want, in quote, it's not the mass. So C is still a massless field in the bulk. Goes like e to the pi mu. So it's a rather large effect than one with a string couple.
Wait, actually, we got confused here by something. When you draw this picture, the perturbative splitting is large compared to the splitting due to tunneling. But in the double slitting limit, I mean, I'm confused. The tunneling stays fixed, but the...
It still becomes small, actually. You're right about the ratio between this and this.
Right.
It's still it's fixed in the double scaling. It's fixed in the double scaling.
But as you take away the cutoff, your IR cutoff, the apparently big splitting goes to zero, right? That's just going from being in a box. Right. So the splitting between the adjacent.
This is all scale.
Right, but they spend very little time there.
I'm sorry,
they're very little. There's not very much. The overlap, right, between these wave functions. You're saying that the overlap of the wave functions also bring you down by a factor of the volume.
I got you. So
this is one interesting thing. Another interesting thing is that V goes to minus V when Q goes to minus Q. And so in particular, the minimum of the potential is shifted from C equals 0 to C equals pi when I change the sign of the flux. So this is a little bit similar to what happens in the higher dimensions, where the minimum of the potential for the axion field also depends on the sign of the flux. And then this is in KKLT, for example, what happens. So what the space-time interpretation of this, so as I said, these non-perturbative effects, the tunneling of the eigenvalues is supposed to be related to the instantons. And in this Liouville time C equals 1 bullshit theory, then the instantons are these ZZ brains. So they're the ZZ brains in Liouville times Dirichlet in the Euclidean time direction. And these ZZ brains are actually localized at infinite phi. So this is maybe one way of understanding. So they're localized at infinite phi, and this is also where the C field is rather light. And so it's conceivable again that this is dynamically stabilized. Okay. So Okay, let me talk about the finite temperature partition function. Are there any more questions to the potential?
Yeah, so in the limit where everything, where you really take away the pi r cutoff, if the Fermi levels aren't equal, you picture a state where there's kind of a net flow of fermions out to the left. Is that a perfect way to think about it?
It's one way of thinking about it, but sort of a perturbative way of thinking about it. The non-perturbative way of thinking about it is that you have even and odd fermions, and that. So the density of
the measurable thing, which is the current at a point.
But that should be zero. If you actually set C to the minimum of its potential,
yes,
then this is zero.
But at the minimum, the states were equally right and left.
They're equally right.
And so at the minimum, somehow this interpretation of mu in terms of difference of Fermi levels goes away because every state is equally on both sides.
Well, they're the even.
So you fill
non-perturbative, it's not good to talk about levels on the left and the right. You can only talk about even and odd modes.
Right.
And you have a different Fermi level for even modes and for odd modes.
That's true at all C, or that's the picture of C equals.
Well, in principle, it's true at all C.
It depends on Q.
True
at all Q.
I guess you started with a classical picture that had a different mu on the right and the left. And, you had thought that some of the non-perturbative effects were small and that was still an approximate picture.
The picture would be this. If you start with this picture at C non-zero,
mm-hmm.
So except for a small region, these small regions are actually of size e to the minus pi mu.
Right.
So if C is not in one of these small regions,
then
you have this picture, and this picture sort of stays valid non-perturbatively.
And then in this region, you have this other.
Right. In this region, you have to. Yeah, I think you have to go to this other picture. But it much of this depends on whether actually C is stabilized or not dynamically.
Yeah. You see, in the infinite volume limit, I can just take a basis of right and left. So E odd and even wave functions.
Right.
And then just have separate Fermi levels, and that just seems like your C equals zero picture.
Right.
Maybe we should write down the term in the matrix model of Hamiltonian.
Do you mean, yeah?
So it's like in the matrix.
The psi. Psi bar of lambda psi of lambda with a mu, and then q psi bar of lambda psi of minus lambda. That would be the term that coupled. I wanted to skip this, but the way this comes from is this isn't sort of an independent way of justifying this identification of the Ramon flux. So this there is this reloaded interpretation of the matrix model, which involves these unstable D0 brains. And
the sequel doesn't measure up. I'm sorry, I was a cheap
shot. Okay. So, T, right, the matrix T is the open string tachyon on these unstable D0 brains. And you have this. The inverted harmonic oscillator is just the quadratic maximum of the open string potential, and which is even under t goes to minus t in the case of the superstrings. And but you also have, from Sen, we know that there is also a coupling to the Ramon fields. So in general, it looks like this, where f, this is some coupling function. And the purpose of this term is that it gives the right charge to the it charges the kink under these lower dimensional Ramon forms. So in particular, you have something like you have some type of BPS condition which relates the charge and the mass. And but there is also another use of this term, which is if you integrate this by parts, you can write it like this, and then you see that the open string tachyon couples to the Ramon flux background. And because of a condition like this, what you know for certain is that this the potential is even under t goes to minus t, but this function is odd under t goes to minus t. So this is the sense in which heuristically, at least, you can identify this difference in Fermi levels for on the left and on the right with the coupling to a Ramon flux background. You can also make a similar argument, actually, for the 0A theory, except that there you have a complex tachyon. And dualities. So all what you do is you compute, you consider the standard grand canonical ensemble for these three fermions. Where beta is the inverse temperature, is the radius of Euclidean time, and mu times n is now mu plus times n plus, plus mu minus times n minus. These are the even and odd levels, and h, so h is this matrix of Hamiltonian, which is the inverted harmonic oscillator, plus, of course, plus the plus this cutoff. And you're interested in the thermodynamic limit of this system. And then you have this quantity delta. It's called delta, but it's really just the expectation value of n. It's 1 over beta d log c d beta, d mu. And this this is still infinite in this thermodynamic limit. So what you do is a convenient quantity to consider is the second derivative of this delta double prime. And right, so this delta thing is just integral f of a, rho of a, where f is the Fermi distribution function, 1 over 1 plus e to the 2 pi r mu minus a. And rho is the density of states. And delta double prime then is integral f prime rho prime. So this is just the convolution integral between rho and f. And so you can evaluate this by Fourier transforming. And then there is the standard results for the Poisson extreme. Bosonic sequels one model, that it's a t over 2r divided by sinh t over 2r. And t over 2, and then sine mu t. And so this is in units. In units, where alpha prime is equal to 1. This is, you see from, because V, so you can read off what alpha prime is from what V double prime at 0 is. Let's see. Okay, and the second derivative of this potential tells you minus the mass squared of the open string tachyon. So this is how you can fix your alpha prime. And this thing now is invariant under T duality. R goes to alpha prime over R and mu goes to r times mu over square root of alpha prime. So this is the standard t-duality of this bosonic string. Now, if we go to the supersymmetric model, then you have different Fermi levels for even and odd. So you expect you have one term from mu plus and one term from mu minus. And mu plus minus is mu plus or minus q. And so it's very simple to guess at least part of what the answer is. You get sine mu t, and then you have cosine q t. But so this would be 0b model. But it turns out that there is actually the density of states for the even and odd modes are not quite the same. There is a non-perturbative difference, or if you want, this is again that the even and odd energy levels are slightly different, so you get another term, which looks like this, cosh t over 2 cosine mu t sine q t. And so actually what I said about the bosonic model is not quite right. I mean, you can, in the bosonic model, all that makes sense to talk about is the asymptotic expansion, because you don't know how this would be defined non-perturbatively. So all you can talk about in the bosonic model was the asymptotic expansion of this term that I had written down. And now in the supersymmetric model, you can again look at the asymptotic expansion of this. And then the interesting thing about this term is that it's the asymptotic expansion is zero. And moreover, it's odd under q goes to minus q. So you can actually distinguish between things that should have an asymptotic expansion and things that don't. So you can have this well-defined distinction. And well, you should be puzzled about the fact that this is odd under q goes to minus q, because I told you that this was related to the Ramond-Ramond flux. So actually, it shouldn't depend on whether you have q or minus q. But this is because this is not the complete result. There is this C field, the C which also enters. And if you take this into account, then this actually contributes. So I tell you, when you go from Q to minus Q, the minimum of the C field goes from 0 to pi. And it actually changes the sign in front of this term. So here I've set C to the minimum of its potential. And then if you want, there is a sine factor, which is cosine C over absolute value of cosine C. It inverts this when q goes to minus q. So it's actually fine. Now, in the context of these type 0 theories, we want to compare this t-duality with the 0a model. So this is the model that Andy talked about, where you have a different potential, and you also have a Ramond-Ramond flux, which enters now in the matrix model potential like this. So here we still have the inverted harmonic oscillator. And you can play the same games and compute this delta double prime. And you can write it in a similar form. T over sinh t over 2r sinh t over 2r sine mu t. And now the flux enters in this way. So here now So in the 0b case, the flux enters in the Fermi levels for even and odd modes. In the 0a model, it enters directly through the potential into the density of states. So it comes in a slightly different way. But you can see that these two expressions want to be t-dual to each other. So first of all, when q is, and q is equal to 0, then you just have the same t-duality as before, alpha prime of r and mu goes to. There's a slightly, actually, a slightly non-trivial transformation on the string coupling. So somehow the string coupling of the 0a and 0b are related in a slightly non-standard way, and we don't really understand why. But right, so alpha prime is actually, in these things, alpha prime is 1/2. there is a factor of two difference between the masses of the open string tachyon for the superstring and for the bosonic string. But so there you have this t-duality. But now if you look for non-zero q, then it looks like they want to be t-dual to each other under the identification that q is, or iq is q. So you want to study this at imaginary flux. And this is sort of suggestive that you have, because you're doing a time-like t-duality. So when you analytically continue your flux, you get a factor of I when you have an electric flux. And then you t-dualize, you lose this leg on the flux. And then you analytically continue back, you don't get the factor of I back. So in that sense, it's sort of natural to have this factor of I in the transformation for the flux. But you have to look a little more closely to really make sure that, because it's not really a cosine, right? Actually, here it's the absolute value of Q that comes in. So, but so you have to reanalyze the zero A model and look what happens at imaginary Q, or you can look at the asymptotic expansion of this. And so, at least the asymptotic expansion of this matches with the asymptotic expansion of this when you set when you relate Q and Q in this way. So the perturbative expansions are t-dual, but the non-perturbative effects seem to not respect at least the naive version of this t-duality. At least not naively. So it's not completely clear to us what the standard. But I mean, these non-perturbative violations of t-duality have been noticed before. I mean, all the arguments we have for t-duality are based on bullshit. And so it's not clear whether they should also hold non-perturbative. So there are maybe two more interesting dualities that. So I talked about the t-duality, which is fine perturbatively, apparently violated by non-perturbative effects. There are other dualities, S-like dualities, which in the matrix model just correspond to particle pole dualities. So I already mentioned that you can have mu to minus mu, and q goes to q. Or minus q. This is, so the, in the spacetime, this involves dualizing the Ramond-Ramond scalar. And in the matrix model, it's just the particle hole duality, where you exchange the particle holes for even and odd modes. But you can also do a particle hole duality for just mu plus or just mu minus. So you can set mu plus to minus mu plus and fix mu minus. And if you look at what this means, so let's say you, if you start from mu equals, from mu and q equals 0, this maps to mu equals 0 and q non-zero. So you're exchanging a background which has a zero Ramond flux with a background which has Ramond flux but no no tachyon turned on. So that's kind of a rather intriguing new type of duality which in exchanges Ramond and Neuville-Schwarz in this way. It's not clear what the exact spacetime interpretation of that is. I'm not so sure how to identify the string coupling in that case. I mean, you can expand these things in powers of 1 over q. No. So q takes on the role of the string coupling. Okay, so in conclusion, let me say that, well, I hope I've convince you that there are some interesting things in these C hat equals one matrix model one can compute, and one can compute the non-perturbative effects exactly. And yeah, I think they're more interesting things. Thank you very much.